I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to Central Standard. Fingerprinting has been around since the age of ancient Egyptians, but modern criminal forensics here in the U.S. have only been using fingerprints to identify criminals for a little more than 100 years. And where do you think that technique was developed? Here in Kansas City. Our friend Patrick Quick went looking for that story.
My quest for the origins of fingerprinting began after hearing about an infamous case of mistaken identity that took place in Leavenworth Federal Prison at the turn of the century. To assist me on my historical journey, I enlisted the help of these men.
Kenneth M. LeMaster, I'm an author, historian, retired from the United States Penitentiary, Leavenworth, Kansas, in 2010. I always tell people I can give them the most mundane information about a federal prison they ever want to know.
Stephen Spence, archive specialist, National Archives of Kansas City.
This curious case of mistaken identity begins in 1903 when a new inmate named Will West arrives at Leavenworth Penitentiary. Only something seems odd about this man's presence.
One afternoon, they bring this man into process, and the records clerk, being an astute individual, looks at Will West and he kind of just gets the idea that he's seen him before, he knows who he is.
They did mug shots, the measurements, everything that you had to do in a prison intake. And he took one look at Will West and said,
"Have you ever been here before?"
"No, sir. I've never been to prison before. I've never been to this prison before."
He started digging around and he says, "Well, don't we have some more files on you?" And he starts looking. Well, he finds this file on William West.
Sure enough, found an inmate from 1901 named William West who was a match. He was like, "See, you have been here before."
He says, "You're telling me that you're not this guy right here?" "No, I'm not that guy right there." Well, they get back into the institution and discover that
the William West from the 1901 file was still in prison.
They have two guys with virtually the same name, virtually the same Bertillon measurements, the same look, same build, same height. And, well, we've got two individuals here that are almost identical.
Looking at their photographs and looking at the Bertillon measurements they used, they could not differentiate.
That term, Bertillon? I'll explain that a little later.
All of a sudden, you're just looking at somebody that looks vaguely familiar and it's not you.
So they tried an experiment. They took both men's fingerprints. They looked at their photographs, looked at their Bertillon measurements, and the only way they could differentiate between the two was through fingerprinting.
Prior to this incident at Leavenworth Prison, fingerprinting had never been used to ID criminals here in the U.S.
In the early years of the prison, they wanted to have a uniform way to identify criminals. And at the time, there was a system in place. It was created in 1879. It was called Bertillon measurements.
It was based on rudimentary measurements of parts of people's anatomy. The circumference of your head, the measurement of the bridge of your nose to your forehead,
the length of your ears, the length of your trunk,
your jaw pattern, the length of your arm from your elbow to your forefinger,
eye color, hair color, all these things.
And all of these were calibrations done using pretty much basically the same tools that a furniture manufacturer would use.
Forensic scientists would then take those measurements and document them with the corresponding criminal.
And the idea behind it was, one, they could track the criminal population, and two, they would, through data collection, come up with a criminal standard. They would know a criminal by looking at them because they had the right physical characteristics.
Theoretically, they'd be able to size up a shady character just by taking his measurements. Bertillon measurements were based in pseudoscience and tended to follow other pseudoscientific trends at the time, such as phrenology and eugenics.
It was a pretty reliable system, but there were people that had very, very similar Bertillon measurements, and then all of a sudden you get these two guys that look pretty darn close to being the same person, and it just starts kind of clicking that maybe there's a better system we could evolve into or a better way to identify these guys.
By measuring and documenting their fingerprints, prison officials could now physically prove that the two Will Wests were two separate people. However, these two inmates look so much alike that, even today, it's still not entirely clear if these two were siblings, identical twins, or if they just happened to look strikingly similar to one another. In fact, our historians Ken and Steve still differ on this.
I've never found any type of relationship that can definitely prove. I mean, I've read articles that, oh, they were brothers, or they were twin brothers, or they were distant cousins or something. I've never been able to make a definite connection that either one of them were related to each other.
Steve thinks otherwise.
I guess the brothers weren't forthcoming at first about being identical twins. You know, maybe they were not trying to shame the family any more than you can be with having two brothers in the same prison. But they discovered, I guess, through going through their correspondence that these letters were going to the same place. And that so they used some, I don't know, social engineering to figure out they were brothers.
Related or not, Will and William West looked identical, and the only way that prison officials were able to tell the difference between them was by using their fingerprints.
Through this happy accident of these, I don't know if you want to call it a happy accident, through this accident of these two identical twins making it to Leavenworth, fingerprinting became the established way to track criminals.
Since then, forensic technologies have evolved over the years and can now identify individuals using DNA, retina scans, or even voice recognition software. Yet fingerprinting continues to be the standard in many cases because of how accurate it is.
It's my understanding there is a 1 in 64 billion chance for two people's fingerprints to be alike. If it wasn't effective and reliable, it would have been replaced by something by now. Technologies don't last for over a century unless they're really, really good.
In fact, fingerprinting became so good that some criminals even attempted to beat the system. Just look at the case of one of Chicago's most infamous gangsters from the 1930s.
John Dillinger used acid to take his fingerprints off.
That was a common thing back in that era. They would burn their fingers, they would cut their fingers, they would shave off their fingerprints. I mean, it really wasn't an uncommon thing, and it was employed by a lot of particularly your mid-20s, early 30s gangsters to avoid detection.
Lots of people try to do it. I don't know how effective that is.
The story of the two Will Wests demonstrated the true value of documenting a criminal's fingerprint.
Back then, it may take a guy 6, 7, 8 hours to positively identify an individual using his fingerprints, where today it's as simple as in a booking room of a local jail, them taking their thumb and sticking it on a pad that's attached to a national crime computer, and within seconds, their entire criminal history pops up on a screen in front of them.
Today, biometrics such as retina scans continue to evolve and adapt to our everyday lives, but fingerprints will continue to be the standard for years to come because of their simplicity and overall accuracy.
You kind of take for granted today what you have and never ever think about, hey, you know, I can take my thumb and stick it on my cell phone and it knows who I am. Where did that all get started?
This story comes to us from contributor Patrick Quick, with help from local historians Stephen Spence of the National Archives and Kenneth Lemaster. A new way.